Hey there. Welcome to The Unpresentable Parts, your go-to spot for conversations that matter, hosted by Tim Blake and Titus Walelo. We're breaking down barriers and building bridges, one story at a time. Tim and Titus invite you into a space where the vulnerable becomes powerful. Ready to join the conversation? Let's dive in.
Hey, welcome to the Unpresentable Parts podcast. My name is Tim Blake, and look who we have here, our illustrious co-host, Titus Walelo.
Yep, we're back.
Come on. Can you tell people what Wiene means?
Wiene means alone, lonely, something along those lines. So it's not a very upbeat, positive name, but Walelo means up today. So let's stick with Walelo.
You're the lonely one today.
Yep. Lonely giant of today. That's me.
Well, it's DVD back together.
Yep.
For some of you don't know, we haven't been able to do a podcast together in probably just if you want to share a little bit.
Yeah. So we are back, as Tim said. You know, I've had a little life, like we all have life happening nonstop. But I stepped away from doing a lot of things, our podcast specifically, because my brother Joel passed away on March 23rd of this year. So March 23rd at 12:48. p.m. Central Standard Time. That's when he died. And so that's been hard, to say the least. It's been hard for me, for my parents, my siblings. It's seven of us. And so losing one is the first immediate family member that we've lost. And so it's been devastating. It was unexpected. It's been hard, but you know, this is the part where I usually would say something positive, but there's nothing positive. You know, it's been hard, but God. Yeah,
that's your unpresentable part.
Yep, that's my unpresentable part. It's been hard. Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Mm.
Come talk to you again.
Well, it'd be good for us to talk a little bit, which may be a bit of a shorter podcast for us,
right?
As we're gonna just catch up and kind of catch everybody up, maybe map out a little bit, do in the future. I think for me, unpresentably, my unpresentable part is there's a mate sadness. I've got a senior graduating high school, and he had his prom this weekend. My bells looked sharp, had his crown, and one of his boys right with him. And it was cool, but then all of these moments kind of flash, you know. And I've got so many pictures and videos just since he was born. And I'm trying to just, as you know, you've got your son and daughter.
Yep.
What it adds to your life, it literally is indescribable.
Mm.
And so, you know, you're proud, but then there's a lot of sadness.
Yes.
And so, anyway, that's kind of where I'm at. Amidst a whole spot of things.
Right. Life keeps lifing, right?
Man, listen, it keeps lifing.
Life be life, and man, it's crazy because I don't know if I shared this with the audience or everybody listening, the two people listening, but so between, you know, right before my brother passed, right before Joel died in March, like 3 weeks before that, my job told us that they were, you know, because I'm a middle school teacher. And our job was like, yeah, you know, we're selling the school. and we want to let you guys know now so you can start looking for work. And so that was a shocker for all of us. And so that was happening, still happening, if you will. But like 3 weeks after that is when my brother died. You know, so there's that part of it, kind of mourning, because both my wife and I work at the same school, and we both enjoy it, and it's a lot of fun. And so we hear that news, and then we're trying to process that news. And then on top of that, my brother dies. And so it's like sorrow upon sorrow, you know, and then we have our kids asking, oh, what school am I going to go to next year? What? I don't know. It's like, I don't know. And it's been like that, you know, looking for jobs where people just ghost you, man. Like these employers are brutal. Like they just ghost you. Like even Christian institutions, man. Like it's like there's no better. People going people. Like that's the bottom line.
Every time.
Everybody know they choose to ignore or whatever it is. Like people spend time applying to these jobs. If you're an employer listening to this, don't be like the people who ghost others. That's it. Just make sure you are kind enough to respond to people who are applying to these jobs. You spend time applying for these jobs and they just don't respond. It's just, it's deflating. It's discouraging. It's frustrating. It's annoying.
I think you can say it sucks.
It sucks.
There's that passage in Hebrews 12 that says no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. And I was like, oh, so God, that means it sucks. That's what it means.
Yep.
I was like, okay, God, I think God will be passing on that one.
Yep. It's interesting. I was talking to somebody recently. They called me because I posted something on my social media, and they were like, hey, just want to check in. You know, I was kind of just concerned, you know, just checking in. I'm like, dude, you haven't called me since my brother died, and now you see this Facebook post that makes you feel unsettled, and now you want to call me to check if I'm okay. I guess that's a good thing. I guess I got to look at it like that. But you know, as I was talking to this person, one of the things that came up is the story of Job, and how we get a glimpse of the conversation happening in the heavenly realm. And Job is like just living his life.
Yeah.
And then smack, like all these things start happening. Thankfully, I'm nowhere near that degree, but grief is grief, right? And we all process grief differently. And it feels that way. It's like, okay, God, like what are you doing? Maybe I shouldn't know the answer to that, or maybe I'm asking the wrong question. Cause I was talking to my wife about it. I'm like, am I supposed to learn something from this? Like, why does it? And then she asked me the question. She said, okay, so everything that happens, is there supposed to be a lesson? And I was like, well, that's what I think. But I don't know. I don't know. Like if it's supposed to be a lesson, and what am I supposed to learn from this? I have no idea. Still waiting for that lesson. You know, mm-hmm. So there's things that have happened over these past 4 years where I feel like Satan is really coming after my faith, right? Like not like, oh, I don't believe in God. I absolutely believe in God, but it's kind of body blow after body blow for those of you who watch boxing. Body blows can take a lot out of you, you know? And so it's like left. And then like my breath, like I felt like I was getting a bunch of body blows. And then my brother dies. It was like that kidney shot, you know, like when, what's this guy's name? Ryan Garcia. Yes, that body shot that he took from oh boy, what's old boy's name?
Was it Tank?
Tank from Tank. He got that bah! Like, oh, and then he just dropped.
All these hands. Oh,
That's what it felt like, man. I'm like, my goodness, God, like, are you even listening, man? You know, like, are you paying attention to what's happening? And granted, I know, like, there are other people will have it worse. I know that. But this is the reality that I'm in. You know, reevaluating relationships, you know, examining, like, oh wow, there's this concept that one of my professors, John Mark Hicks, shout out to John Mark. We're gonna try to get him on this podcast. We gotta get John Mark on this
Oh,
podcast,
you must.
but
I really like him.
one of the things John Mark was sharing, we did, he hosted a Zoom call for grief, remembrance, and anniversary. And in that, he shared about collateral beauty. We've heard of collateral damage, right? Like, but collateral beauty, seeing the beauty in this devastating, tragic event. And for me, that collateral beauty has been the realization of the depth of some relationships that I have. I'm like, wow, okay, these are my people. And I knew that I married well before my brother died, but I think just seeing how my wife has been literally a rock, has been super supportive. I'm like, man, you know, I hit the lottery with that one, you know, because like even in the day that we were burying my brother, my wife was sick. And she was like, I can't make it. But then she somehow mustered up the strength to take an hour drive with me because she said, I couldn't imagine you going through this day by yourself, you know, knowing obviously my family was going to be there, but she was like, I couldn't miss this. She could barely stand up, keep her eyes open, but she was there. She was there for me. And so the collateral beauty is one of the things that I've seen through the tragic loss of my brother Joel.
I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Joel was the first spouse from your family, your immediate.
Yes.
And he was your older brother, right? 37.
Yeah, he was my older brother, 37 years young. So,
And just
37 years.
for some quick context before I do want to ask a couple questions. The just for some context for everyone, the school that Titus and Chandler work at is a private Christian school. So I know when these judges got sold, people like, it's terrible problem. It is Florida.
It
It is Florida, but
That's fun.
the private Christian schools, so smaller classrooms, all this stuff. So it's a different dynamic.
Yes.
It's another animal.
I only have 16 students, so it's golden. It's golden. I know that I'm never gonna have I may not have anything like this again, but this was golden. It was great.
It's special, and so it makes it even more painful. Losing something you probably won't recapture in that. But you mentioned kind of this season, and if you don't mind,
Sure.
Titus got to Nashville, back to Florida, being Nashville, when he worked in paid ministry. And was there some battling ends in the way that anyone would have wanted?
Right.
And so, though there's some life and relationships, God does God things, and so God used it. And there's a bunch of transition there, and so I was kind Dice, Florida, where he worked in the ministry. And things were great there for a year until things changed. And then things weren't great. So you stepped out of ministry a year ago, right?
Yes, I did.
A year ago, April?
My last official day was May 31st.
Oh, May 31st, last year.
Yeah. But I turned in my letter of resignation like at the beginning of May.
Yeah. All right. And so funny, we may dive into that a bit later and another down the road. But I think Titus is an excellent minister. He's been getting 1,000 calls for jobs in ministry. I think I made one of those calls, but it's clear he would take a step away to teach, which is his strength, his link kids. And so, and now God is, the door's closing. And so that has been a lot.
Yeah, it has. I think that's the difficult part to try to navigate or try to explain. For you, right, you've walked with me through all of this, and then there's others like my wife and close friends who've walked with me through the different transitions. You know, I was talking to one of my siblings. I was like, you know, I don't put anything on anybody else. Like, I'm like, I take ownership for the things that I've done. And I'm like, yeah, I know that I can be hard-headed. I'm saying this on record. Like, I know I can be hard-headed. My mom and my dad tell me that all the time. Tim has said it multiple times. African pride.
Yeah, it's in my blood. It's in my DNA.
It's in the DNA. But, you know, I think there's, it's hard to try to express the depth of transition and hurt and damage that has been done. I think I'm just now realizing some of that because of talking through it with therapists and friends and just realizing like, wow, this is a lot. And as I was sharing with one of my siblings, how after Nashville, you know, I was let go, and I was let go because they were just moving in a different direction. My wife and I were on staff together, and, she stepped down from being on staff, and, the staff there wanted to hire a husband and wife, and they didn't want to just have a husband on staff by themselves. And so I was let go. They wanted to move in a different direction. And so after that, I didn't have a job when I was let go. I didn't have a job waiting in the wings like, hey, all right, Titus, we're ready to hire you now. And so that was difficult because I have, you know, at the time, our kids were 3 and 1, three and one, almost 2. And we literally couldn't afford to stay in Nashville where we lived because, you know, we didn't have the money for it. And so we moved in with our friends for 3 months, you know, like, so me, my wife and our kids, we packed up our car and we went and stayed with our friends, Chris and Terenika in Eads, Tennessee, for 3 months. Right. And so technically we were homeless, but we had people, who love us. And, you know, man, of the dark time, my boy Greg Russell, we were on a Zoom call. He was like, yo, what's that in the background? Because Eads is like a country. So he's like, bro, you in Eads? He's like, I grew up in Eads. He's like, what's going on?
Oh, really? Hey, man.
For a man.
Stay LA.
Yeah, Greg Russell. Yeah, from Eads to LA. It's crazy. But you know, during that season, I was asking the same. I'm like, God, what am I supposed to learn from this? Maybe getting some skills to where if stuff like that happens again, I have something in my quote unquote back pocket, which I got certified to be a trainer, and then I let that certification go to expire because I stopped training people because I was like, yo, I need to focus on grad school, and being a dad. And so it's been crazy, man. Like, it's legit been crazy. But through all of that, Tim, like, for me, man, it's good.
And I was just going to say, I don't think people, they may not know, but you're also pursuing a graduate degree.
Yes.
Now
I'm
transitioning.
just in. Yeah, all of that. All of that. It's so there's a lot of moving pieces. There are a lot of moving pieces, and I really am grateful. This is not just a cliche saying. I am grateful for the core relationships that I have. I think through all of these transitions and challenges, I've been honestly, I've been able to ride the wave or the coattail of other people's faith. Because there have been times when I'm like, God, I just don't have it. I don't have it. And for a while I'm like, well, dude, you're the head of the household and blah 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 blah. Like, get out of here. I ain't got it. like up there days where it's just I just ain't got it. And so and it's been great to really experience what the Bible talks about being in community. Now, obviously, you guys are in Connecticut, we're in Florida, and then I have relationships in Alabama and different parts of the country. I've got bros in different area codes. But it's I think it's really just trying to understand.
Keep
Trying to
that really.
understand, like, man, God's got me.
does. He does.
God's got me. God's got me.
Yeah. The I forgot about the last one. That's another reason, because during that, there's a month span where Tom Jackson needed to catch up on his graduate school work. Because they don't stop. That doesn't stop. So, but the one thing, if I can, before, I do want to ask a couple questions before we go about your brother. The something we're looking to know about paid ministry, in two things. It is a calling, and so there you may get a bunch of different calls. Oh, come here, come here. This would be great. You look great. It, you may not be called bird by God. And so, and say when the bad money ain't good money, all jobs ain't good jobs. And it may not be where God is calling you. And so, and that's a tricky one. Also, the reality of working in a church and being called by God in ministry is, it don't mean you're best friends with everybody. It doesn't mean you click. And sometimes you got sadness in your life because God is trying to draw the David out of you. And sometimes, and pray to the right, and say that we can be the Saul to someone. And myself as a church leader, and having said, I'm always cognizant of, like, man, I do not want to be the Saul. But that's just the truth. You don't always click diamonds for different reasons to expose different things. And if we're faithful, he'll work it out. But I think there can be a misconception that, oh, ministers just click. We ain't love God. We love one another. We all read Jesus. Nah, bro. Don't work that way. Because we catch each other in different seasons. And, maybe on the back end, you're like, oh man, I see what God's doing. But in the moment, it's like, nah, I need to get up out of here. So, in any case, I want to give you context because I do think it's important for people to understand that it's not like, oh, things went bad in Nashville, things went bad in Florida. There must be Titus. We will get into it another time, unless you say, It wasn't cystitis. So, okay. So you lost your brother, neither way you drew it out. And if I can, you don't mind me sharing.
Go ahead.
Let me say, you can tell a lot about a person by the people who show up and the people that share when they pass away. Every time. And the wide spectrum of people that came and shared, and there was a common theme of heart and love and gentleness and a desire for everyone to be doing well,
mm-hmm.
and the care and concern that Joel had. It was remarkable. And I think, and again, I experienced as your brother, you would meet me up every once in a while. Hey, dude, just checking me. Thanks, George. I've been up there to see you. Yeah. And when I would go down to the Southern Connecticut church in Hartford, Southern Connecticut, about 45 minutes or an hour away, and I would see him meet a lot of Lewis or, and I didn't know Omar, that he's my best now. He's like, oh, I left your way. I used to get by the church. We said the Bible. And, you know, he showed up. And seeing Scott Benoit, seeing the people that showed up, you just saw the impact. And it always is difficult because, I'm just going to be honest, whenever someone, just a great person, passes, oh my God, I got a million people you can take. But I got a name. Like, I got names, lists, reasons. Like, take them.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, I'm sure God, somebody, I may be on somebody else's list, so. Like, I'm probably on somebody's list, too. You're like, God, you take team. I think it's difficult when it is just a little extraordinary. It's a, your brother, he had an accident. Cutting on people lynching. And if you don't want to talk about it, we're not going to talk about it.
Nah, he didn't have an accident per se. Just life stuff that's happened throughout his life. You know, he got sick when he was 19. And so, you know, that was with him. He carried that until the day he died.
Crap.
Yep.
And so you've been dealing with the grief, and we just went through the series of abuse from the valley. And I think you would describe that this time was your valley period, valley season.
Yep. I would absolutely describe this as a valley season. I think somebody built a house for me here, but I'm trying to sell it so I could get out of here.
We're supposed to pass through the valley, not tearing up a residency.
Yep.
Yeah, or what? I know we talk relationship things, but as far as you and God, what's been kind of some of the struggle?
That's a great question. I think the first one is prayer. Trying to reconcile what is prayer? What is it, the quantity or the quality, right, of prayer? When my brother was in the hospital in the ICU, when we initially got the call, we were praying. I'm praying. I'm asking people to pray. I got so desperate. Like, I put it on Facebook. I'm like, hey, we need people to pray.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people are praying, but the answer was no. The answer was no. Because we were specifically praying that Joel gets healed. We were praying that Joel gets out of the coma. We prayed for those things. My mom is a praying woman. Like, this is what I know about my mom, my parents. She was praying, crying, pleading with God, and nothing. Nothing, you know. So I started asking the question after Joel died, is what's the point? You know, different people have different perspectives. Thank God, if you're just going to say no anyway, you got this 300-pound, 50-year-old walking around looking unhealthy, yet my brother is over here dead. Like, you know, all these thoughts went through my mind. Like, and talk about your list. And so I struggled with overweight people for like the first few weeks that Joel died, because every time I'm like, how, God? Like, he was healthier than this person. Yeah, like, why would you? And so the prayer part, so wrestling with that, trying to learn how to pray again, like trying to learn, like, what does it mean for me to actually pour my heart out to God? What is the purpose? And obviously, there's been not a new question that I'm asking, right? There's tons of literature on it. There's theologians and philosophers who've had asked the same questions that I'm asking. And so it's just, you know, when the space is there, when I create some space, I might enter into that space and actually deal with it. For now, it's like, I'm just trying to put one foot in front of the other. But yeah, like, one of the main things has been prayer, really just wrestling with God, with the idea of prayer. What does prayer look like? Now, you know, what happens when God says no? You know, like, I still trust him. Do I trust him with everything now? Or do I pull back a piece of my heart because I feel let down and disappointed? Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things that just wrestling with God.
It's really difficult. It's a recurring part of faith, and it's amazing when you go through things how scriptures come alive, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember reading Acts 12, where, and I think I shared this with you, where Peter and James were in prison. James was beheaded. The congregation, they were praying, he was going to behead, to get Herod or whoever, was going to behead Peter. Congregation prayed favorably, an angel comes, releases Peter, he comes to the house, he's knocking on the door. Velma comes back, so it's Peter chilling in the window, which says something about when you play for, we like him to leave. And so he comes in the door, and he's like, I think it's his ghost. When he keeps banging, he comes in, and they're like, they're amazed. The migraine was at least, what about James's people?
Right.
How did they feel?
Right.
They prayed. They called out to God. They were faithful.
Right.
And imagine women at home, maybe battling with God. They're praying. And who knows what their faith with. I'm speaking to you. I'm putting myself there. I'm not even praying, but like, God's going to do what he's going to do. And then Peter shows up. And you're like, God, well, James, he helped my faith. James did this. You know, you go down your list of all the great things that James did. And you're like, well, God, why Peter? And why, you know, why can't it be reversed, God? You know, Peter got to walk on water. Yeah, you know, you can't take that away. But James. And so that always, when I read that, it changed the way I looked at things. And I think that's a struggle. That's a real legitimate struggle.
But what I was going to say is, I'm talking about the God piece, and I think you learn, I think you were quoting at the beginning, Hell of Darkness, Thou Friend. And I think you and I have been talked about Psalm 88.
Psalm 88.
I think it's transformative for me, because it ends as it did 1-3, the darkness.
Hello, darkness.
Yes.
let me actually, if it's okay, I think we have a lot of time. Let me just read it, because I'm going to read the New Living Translation just to help with communicating the depth of of the text.
Yeah.
Verse 1, Psalm 88. O Lord, God of my salvation, I cry out to you by day. I come to you at night. Now hear my prayer. Listen to my cry. For my life is full of troubles and death draws near. I'm as good as dead, like a strong man with no strength left. They have left me among the dead, and I lie like a corpse in a grave. I'm forgotten, cut off from your care. You have thrown me into the lowest pit, into the darkest depth. Your anger weighs me down with wave after wave. You have engulfed me. You have driven my friends away by making me repulsive to them. I am in a trap with no way of escape. My eyes are blinded by my tears. Each day I beg for your help. O Lord, I lift my hands to you for mercy. Are your wonderful deeds of any use to the dead? Do the dead rise up and praise you? Can those in the grave declare your unfailing love? Can they proclaim your faithfulness in the place of destruction? Can the darkness speak of your wonderful deeds? Can anyone in the land of forgetfulness talk about your righteousness? O Lord, I cry out to you. I will keep on pleading day by day. O Lord, why do you reject me? Why do you turn your face from me? I have been sick and close to death since my youth. I stand helpless and desperate before your terrors. Your fierce anger has overwhelmed me. Your terrors have paralyzed me. They swirl around me like a floodwaters all day long. They have engulfed me completely. You have taken away my companions and loved ones. Darkness is my closest friend. Psalm 88.
Yeah. That song.
And so, you know, it ends with, right. No, what I was saying, like the way it ends is like, yeah, you've taken people away from me. It feels that way at times. Like, man, darkness is my only friend right now. Mm. It doesn't always feel, you know, you feel like you're crazy because one minute you're okay. And then next minute you're crying. And then next minute you're fine. And then next minute you're angry. And then it's like all these different emotions happening at the same time. And then you're trying to find a job. You know, it's like all of that.
And your talents need your attention and your presence.
Yes. Yes. They need you to be available. They need me to be present. And so trying to play and be engaged, be alert, and be present for them. Right. So there's all of that. There's all of that.
Yeah. The song for me, it changed me. Because again, when I became a Christian at 19, not familiar with the fact that again, I'm my only church experience. So in our church, our fellowship at the time was everything was awesome. Everything's happening all the time. If you're not happy, it's because you're not praying long enough, not reading enough, you're not sharing your faith enough. You're too self-focused, you're navel-gazing, you're not grateful. Get out and share your faith. Do something. And so you'll do better. And, you know, I can't even remember anybody ever reading this passage, let alone preaching it. But as time went on, as I began to experience losses, and I remember reading this, and I was like, oh my gosh. Like, it was fine to have this type of prayer where it is in God. I'm just out here. I'm alone. Like, you turn your face from me. You know, all the stuff that you feel, right? You've been blessed with, you've taken things away from me, and I'm just here. And I forgot, I don't know if it's Timothy Keller that describes it as there's an outer darkness where things are crazy around us on the outside, but then there's an inner darkness, which the psalmist, so he's that inner darkness. And he kind of puts it out later when Jesus felt that at the cross, that outer darkness and that inner darkness, like
You know, everything is on that weight.
Because it, to me, gave me such encouragement, and, you know, battling with depression and all that. And so it's like, oh, it's okay to not be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's I think, is key to just remember that, like, it's okay to not be okay. Because I've felt at times, and then on top of that, I'm a teacher, right? I'm a middle school teacher, so having to go into work, making sure I'm okay, like doing self evaluations, self check ins, to make sure that I'm able to be present for my students, because, you know, they didn't ask for any of this. Like, they didn't ask for me to be their teacher. They didn't say, like, oh, you know, you're gonna go through a lot. But they're there. Their parents entrusted me and my co-teacher to teach them. And so I take that very seriously. And so having to navigate all of that, like, it's an emotional roller coaster. It's been an emotional roller coaster. And I am getting to a spot where it's like, you know, yeah, like, today's a good day, but I'm not okay. Like, you know, I'm not okay. But I think just trusting God in all of this and leaning into Him. Like, I have been trying to learn how to pray again. It sounds odd to say that, but I'm trying to learn how to actually engage with God, pour out my heart to Him and wrestle with Him. Because, you know, I had a couple nights where I've gone to the beach and now I've had some conversations with God. And so I've had to communicate with Him what I'm thinking and feeling.
That element, a core part in that, I was able to sit on that Zoom call with John Mark Hicks, and a couple of really interesting things that came out of that. But I know one of the conversation parts is how you deal with people when they're grieving or when they're in grief and when they're mourning or having a loss. And then there's a general tendency to what? Make everybody feel good.
Yeah. Try to make things better. Yeah.
Try to make it better, which is some of the worst. And I think you shared, there are two points of people that I want to get with you before we close out. If you're talking to people, or you are talking to people, what would you tell them about three things not to do with the grieving person?
Three things. I know for me, I wish, first thing is don't ask them what they need. Because I've had so many people just assume people are going to need food and money. Assume that there's a need for food and money. Because I had people saying, like, hey, what can we do? Just let us know. And we want to help. That's encouraging. Like, they're thinking that way. But at the same time, I'm not in a space to think about my needs right now. You know, I can't process what's happening around me. And I'm not in a space to tell you what I need. So yeah. And it's not saying, like, be a mind reader, but even use the relationships around that person. If the person is saying, I don't know what I need, call a spouse, call a best friend that they have, call a close family member, like, you know, interact with people around them, because that person themselves may not necessarily know what they need in the moment. So that would be one. Don't ask them what they need. Like, just assume that they need food, and assume that they probably need finances. And so that's the first one. I think second one, I would say, at least for me, I wish that people didn't tell me he's in a better place. That was not helpful. That has not been helpful, because a lot of people have said, you know, he's in a better place. He's in a better place and be strong. He's in a better place. Be strong. He's in a better place. Be strong. How do you know that he's in a better place? You don't know that. You've never been to that place to come back and tell me that he's in a better place. So stop it. Like, you don't know that. You don't know where they are. And so, yeah, I wish people would stop saying that phrase. You know, they're in a better place. They're in a better place and be strong. I don't have to be strong. I just lost a loved one. Why do I have to be strong in this moment? Why do I have to be strong right now? You know, like I just lost somebody that I love. Why do I need to be strong? And so I think those two for me were really important. And the third one, I think, is reach out, initiate, and don't take it personal when somebody doesn't respond, who's grieving, because it really is overwhelming. Like, it really is. To think through, like, man, let me call these people back. I may call one or two people back, and that's what I can do for that day, or I might text them back. Well, because again, for me, I didn't have the emotional bandwidth to engage in those conversations and try to, because there were times when, you know, there were a couple of people that I hung out with early on that I felt like, oh, I need to be okay in order for them to be comfortable. Like, that's what I was thinking. Like, oh, you know, like, let me be regular old Titus making jokes and making things light. But I'm like, no, there's nothing to joke about right now. there's no joke for me to make. I just buried my brother, you know? So, yeah. And people mean well, but people have said some really dumb things. Unkind things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I'm glad you said that. You understand the heart is people, you know, they want to help, but it's, and that call we were on, I can't remember the woman saying, I think she's from Nashville, but she said something very interesting. She said, you know, in the West, in America in particular, people used to die at home. Mm-hmm. They used to die in the home. And then, you know, they would have to go and bury them. And, you know, over the past century plus, we're divorced from it. We have hospitals, funeral homes, all these things to keep death away from us, where literally a lot of cultures around the world is so personal. And so you grow, you see it more and more, and our culture doesn't really allow for that now. And so people are very uncomfortable with pain, suffering, death. And there's a whole, actually, there's whole industries. No, most of our commercial stuff is built out. Oh, everything's good. It's hard to get Kmart. It's not about death, suffering, or pain, which is life. And so when people experience it, they don't know how to, they just don't know how to act. Yeah, so she just mentioned that, and I thought that was fascinating. I was like, yeah, true, you don't. And so for me, I think I've experienced a lot of loss over the past 20 years, and so and you deal with it differently. Different losses hit differently at different times. My father was one thing. My mom was 7, and I talked to her. I was the last person to talk to her, I believe. And then she had heart failure, and it was complicated. She died in 2016, and I didn't fully work through it and didn't give myself the space, even in prayers. I felt like I didn't have the energy. It was too painful until last August. I had to break down. And so, yeah. Oh. So one last thing on the people front, on the church front, you mentioned earlier, yeah, you had a long Facebook post to garner some attention. If you were to share, William, let's say, ministry staff and elders or shepherds within a congregation, if you would like them some input on how to handle people that are mourning. It can be one thing.
Yeah, I think the gift of presence. The gift of presence. We've heard this saying, and we've heard people talk about people being present. Like Job's friends, I mentioned Job earlier. In my opinion, the only good thing that they did was when they showed up and were quiet for 7 days with Job. But they were present. They were available. They were there. It all went downhill when they started talking, you know. But I think just the gift of presence, just as a shepherd, read Ezekiel 34. And I think I would do any shepherd, any staff person, if you have a member in your congregation who loses a loved one, show up. Even if it's like, hey, I'm at the door, I dropped some food off, show up. Just show up. If there's nothing else, there isn't anything else that you get from this, show up. Whatever that looks like, show up. Even if it's just, hey, I know you don't want to see anybody. I left you a card at your door. I'm praying for you. Yes, we know you're praying for us, but physically show up. Just text and call. Physically show up. Like, bro, I know you don't want visitors. I just want to stop by and give you a hug. And I'm heading out, you know, like something. Just show up. Just show up for your people.
I appreciate that. But it's in leading a church now and being here at Hartford for 17 years, leading a church for the past 7 years. That is one of the things that I have learned is you just stop by. I don't ask for permission. I just go, and I'll read the word. I don't even say them all, but I gotta know. There's a brother recently who lost his son, and one of the elders and I needed to go kind of inform him that his son had passed. And I showed up, and honestly, I didn't say a word. I stood there, I cried as he was giving the notification, and I just stood there, just there. And then that's one of the most important things. I'm glad you said that. I didn't learn how to shut up. Just shut up and be there, and it's uncomfortable, and it's painful, especially if you have a relationship. It's not just congregants. It's like, no, this is my brother, this is my sister, and they have lost a part of them. I know for you, well, it's been a lot, you know. You've never lived in a world without Joel.
Nope.
And it's different.
Yep.
You hear things differently. You see things differently. Their things just don't matter as they do. There's a great quote, actually, if you don't mind. It's, and I may give the attribute, I may attribute it in the notes, but it's, I believe the saying goes, some things can only be seen through eyes that have cried. And it's true. Even though it's painful and it hurts. And last thing, everything is not a celebration of life. In Acts chapter 8, Acts 7 and 8, Stephen was martyred, and it says God knew him, They took his body and they mourned for him deeply. And so that whole idea of, oh, we got to celebrate. No, no, no. Sometimes the message hurts.
And I don't care what your faith is, when the person spiritually was, it hurts because they are no longer here.
Yeah.
And you mourn for them and you value them.
And a piece of you is no longer there. It hurts. So,
hey man, I love you. I appreciate you being willing to share.
Yeah, love you too.
And just so everyone will
figure out the timing, I do have a couple other kind of things set up.
So there will be podcasts in our late eve edition as you're going.
And so as Titus is coming in just a week and a half of work and finish the transition and something to us for school, we're going to figure that out. So you may add some new interviews and things like that, but we'll work it out.
Okay?
Yeah. Awesome.
Thank you.
Awesome, awesome. Thanks for joining us.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
And please, subscribe, like, rate, review, and
we'll see you next time.
Deuces.